You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman, as always, one of the co-hosts of this wonderful show. And joining me, because we're going to be together all week, and I'm not going to have a joke for him right now because I think it's almost too just like depressing of a moment to have some kind of joke to start this podcast.
It's not depressing.
Not depressing, but like, I don't know. I'm just not in a joyful mood. I mean, I'm in a mood. It's not like bad, but just like disappointing game one. So I'm joined by Tony East, as always, from Forbes.com and the West Indianapolis Community News and wherever else he writes / does stuff for.
Yeah, 113-101 final score of game one for the Pacers, Adam. And if you told me that before the game, I would have thought not good. But I really thought that they played mostly – I thought the Pacers played mostly pretty good in this game despite losing by double figures.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this before the podcast. Three and a half quarters, 3.2 quarters they played well, or played better than the Heat or as good as Heat, I guess.
They had a really terrible last 4 minutes, and some of that was just Jimmy Butler just canned two threes out of nowhere, which the dude shoots like 24% from three this season. I think they were prepared to let him take both of those. And then they couldn't buy a bucket with the starters for the last couple minutes of the game.
Really the whole second half mainly. I mean, there's
the bench was really keeping a minute for the last few minutes of the third and early fourth. They took advantage of the Butlerless, Bamless minutes there. But yeah, I thought outside of those two stretches, they really played pretty good. They were ahead a lot of the game. Not a lot. They weren't like
– no, they were within striking distance most of the game.
They were ahead a few times. They were – yeah, they were right in it for a lot of the game. They just – when it came down to the end, they just were so slow at their offense that they couldn't get it done. So they really screwed this one up in crunch time. But mostly, again, like over three quarters of, I thought, pretty good basketball for both teams.
Yeah, it didn't help. Oladipo got hurt to start, the first 8 minutes of the game. So he was kind of there. I would say to start, he was the most energizing force in the team, I better put it. Or he was really pushing the pace, pushing the team to go at the rim and get fouls. I mean, he got all four of his points at the line to start this game. I mean, he was
right away.
He was aggressive. And to me, he hadn't taken enough shots to know whether he's going to hit a shot or not. But like, to me, that was the way he played. And he wasn't nearly as good as he was 2 years ago in the playoffs, 3 years ago, whenever that was. I guess it was 2 years ago now. But to me, that reminded me of him in the playoffs last time, where he just like, and he came pretty close on a couple of times too, to actually hitting that kind of driving by a guy and throwing it in. He just was like just a tiny bit off, better than it been in the past. He wasn't getting stripped before he took the shots. So that was kind of an improvement, I guess, for him.
Yep.
But to me, it just looked like, oh, Oladipo kind of has that like swagger, and it's kind of the guy you're going to need when, you know, 8 minutes going in the fourth quarter, the game is within 2 or 4 points. He's the kind of player you're going to need who can just get his bucket, right? Because most of the night, I mean, it's a struggle, right? T.J. Warren was being basically double, triple.
They were one player short.
Yeah, I mean, Warren gets the ball, and he's triple-teamed every time, pretty much. I mean, they were throwing two or three guys at him, depending on who they had switched on him. Brogdon could beat a guy, but he couldn't always get to the right spot, and Bam was there to back up and kind of stuff him at the rim. So they just needed another guy. And then, so not having Vic and then combine that with Aaron Holiday basically playing with foul trouble until basically just the fourth quarter was just kind of, I think, almost crippling for the team.
So first quarter, the Pacers had 22 free throw attempts in this game. 12 of them were in the first quarter, right? And that seems just like insane to me that they had over half in the first. And I think that's a testament to really what they lost between, we'll get to Aaron Holiday, but between those, both Vic and Holiday with Vic's injury and Holiday's fouls, is that with the starting five that they wanted, which had Depot and Aaron Holiday with Turner, Warren, and Brogdon, is they could really spread it out. They had other ways they could attack mismatches, attack what they wanted to either get a step or get a foul. They were moving the ball really well and getting to an advantageous spot to draw a foul. Depot did that a lot. He got four up in that first quarter. Brogdon got four up. Aaron Holiday himself got two free throws up, right? That group really was finding ways to drive and get penetration and make stuff happen. In the absence of Depot, again, they took 10 free throws the entire rest of the game. And they were, you know, Aaron Holiday was out for chunks of that time too. He was good in that first quarter when he was playing. But they really just – they lost a lot of weaponry, like, without Victor and his aggression. And, you know, we've seen him struggle in the bubble at times just – being too aggressive with his shot. But, you know, in this game, when Jay Crowder was the guy who he was matched up with for his 8 minutes, that was a good matchup for the Pacers. It made the Heat have just a little bit of pause with switching and how they were throwing defense at the Pacers. And I think that him leaving the game really hurt more than I thought it would at the time.
Yeah, to me, it felt like a momentum shift. I mean, I thought they were close in that first quarter to sort of blowing the game open in a way.
They were up like six at the end of the first, right?
Well, and the way Justin Holiday was shooting, it just, to me, it felt like, yeah. Right, because they didn't have Vic out there and they weren't able to stagger Warren with that correctly, they basically had a few moments where they were just out an offensive player pretty much, or anybody who could get his own shot. And that really, to me, threw it off, because I think to start this game, it felt like they just had a game plan. And I don't know if it would have sustained for four quarters, and it clearly didn't, but their game plan was, we're just going to attack the hell out of this team, and we're going to draw all kinds of fouls, yep. And we're just going to hope to keep guys in foul trouble, and then we're going to hope just to frustrate the crap out of them. And really, I mean, if you look at most of the night, right, they had a pretty good game plan. Duncan Robinson, who was 2 of 8 from three, and that's a win. Anything below, what, 40% of them, 50% is a win any game.
Yep.
And then really for the first half, at least, they had a really good plan for Butler. I mean, I thought Butler in that first half, besides getting the line about 10 times in the first, 18 minutes, really just didn't have a lot of good shots. They had
Butler in the first half was 4 for 10.
Right. And that's a win again. And it felt like they didn't let Turner get in foul trouble. Like Butler wasn't getting Turner to bite. Turner made some nice plays in both Bam and Butler in the first half when it felt like they had a full strength and Brogdon was being kind of a nuisance to him. It felt like they had a really good game plan to start, and it broke down because the game plan was to let Vic just kind of roll the offense, right? Be the energy guy on offense, and let Brogdon maybe sit back and just kind of not be maybe a not score 20 points, right? Let him, or 18 shots, be a guy who maybe takes more like 12 or 15, because preserving him for the defensive end to really go after Butler. And then they kind of fell apart once Vic got out. And I just feel like it was kind of like the Jenga board, right? You have everything set up perfectly, and then you pull out one piece and it just crumbles all down. And that's me what it kind of felt
like.
And
that analogy.
They hung around still. I mean, let's be clear.
They were up in the third and – or up. They were up in the fourth quarter at one point. That's a crucial thing to say.
I think the problem is that if you're watching the game, and I thought this too, they had to really win those minutes. Like, we weren't talking about just, like, kind of win them. They had to, like – I thought they had to be up by, like, 8.
When Butler and Bam were out, they just dominated.
I thought they had a dominance, like, almost – just because I knew what was coming.
An insane extent, right?
Yeah, I mean, and – They really didn't have the ability to do that because they played the best they could with those kind of bench units. But right. I thought the other thing, I think we should talk about this for a second too, is the one benefit from Vic leaving, not a benefit, but the one thing we did see is I thought Evan Sumner was really
great game
when he came in. And I think we talked about how he might be the guy to like replace Aaron Holiday or whatever, or be in the extra bench guy. And so, I mean, he played the part. He was just
so we were right about something. We were right that Justin Holiday would play more than Aaron. Some of that was the foul trouble, but Ed played a ton too, which was surprising to me. And some of that cooks into, I wanted to talk about this in the context of everything we talked about, but Aaron Holiday's minutes being down because of his fouls too was really problematic for some of the stretches where they couldn't get offense going. But yeah, they threw in Ed for Aaron early because of the fouls, and they started Ed in the second half for Victor because of his eye injury. Only six, like if you just looked, you'd see he only had 6 points. And I would just say that is not a good way to really show what Ed did out there, because he also had 6 rebounds. He pushed the ball hard in transition. And then you flip up to Duncan Robinson, who was 2 for 8 from three and really struggled to get any space on Ed. Ed was the best at chasing him and fighting through screens like we thought he could be. But to see it manifest in a way where they couldn't even get the ball to Duncan Robinson at times, right? They, without Dragic going off from deep, the Heat would really not have had a solid weapon from really the outside, or a guy to get the ball in those situations. So, yeah, I think they did a pretty good job on him, if we're being honest. And Edmund Sumner was a big part of that.
Yeah, I mean, I think Dragic was probably the X factor in this game, right? I mean, I think Butler was obviously had the clutch play, but like, Butler could have scored 28, and they easily could have lost if Dragic didn't have the 24-point night.
I mean, yeah, Dragic was really good, and some of that was, who they had to play as well.
Well, they were focusing on everybody else a ton. I mean, they were sort of willing to let him be the guy that beat them, and he beat them, frankly.
He did. He really did. 4 for 9 from deep, 5 for 10 on two-pointers.
I think 21 second-half points, I want to say, or 19, something crazy like that.
Let me check for you.
He had a ton of second-half points. I mean, he was – there was a stretch where he was killing it, and I can remember this.
Yeah, Goran Dragic did in fact have 21 second half.
Wow, look at that! First try, got it right. So just kept it.
Him and Butler had over 60% of their second.
Yeah, I mean, Dragic was a plus 20. I mean, him and Bam.
He was fantastic.
I know plus minus like a great indication of who's good or bad, but it shows when he was on the court, they dominated in this.
Bam Dragic Butler lineups were huge. Every other Heat lineup was not. Yeah. So let's get to Aaron, because I keep coming to focus on that. I think if either one of just Vic or just Aaron had the minutes they had because of either fouls or injury, I think they probably maybe not win, but this game is really close all the way down to the end, and they could have won.
I think they struggle with clutch play still without Vic.
Right, but not having both was just brutal. Like, Aaron played really well when he was in. He had a three. He was driving well. His defense was fine. But not having both meant that they, you know, as much as we liked Sumner's defense and we wanted to see Justin Holiday with starting five more, me and you talked about how he's going to play a ton of minutes. When you have Justin Holiday, Edmund Sumner, and Miles Turner out there, those guys can, like, handle the ball. They're, you know, they're fine at it, but they're not dangerous enough that the Heat were, like, worried about them to any sort of useful degree for the rest of the team. So Warren would catch the ball, and immediately they would send a trap or some extra coverage, or Brogdon would get a switch all the time. They were so prepared to overload those two that without Holiday or Depot, they just couldn't get enough handling or attacking to really get the Heat defense moving and get good looks for other people. That's why when the bench was in, you know, sometimes they had a little more handling just by having McConnell have the ball all the time, but, you know, they figured out ways to do it. I think when we get to adjustments, I'll talk about McConnell, but I like to see his minutes up. But I think Aaron Holiday's fouls were really, when added on to Depot, were really killer.
Yeah, I got a weird question for you. Man, weird one, but if you had to bet one guy to be in foul trouble, or maybe even like 3 to 5, where's Aaron Holiday on that list? If you had to bet
bottom before the three game, guys.
Right? Like, I'm thinking like Turner comes first for sure. I mean, it's just the way, because he's just
Turner's
constantly
one,
in a ton of
Warren and court. Brogdon are 2, 3. Samson's
in there.
Like
before. And then the way he got called for that foul in the third quarter, which was really tic-tacky, right? I'm not even
sure. Sucked him out of the game right away.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about the Heat, and they almost learned this from the Rockets, is that, like, can you notice what they do is they beat the defender and then they stop suddenly to draw the foul right as the guy's running back at them. And not that it's definitely a foul. I mean, wrong, but it's just like, it's such like a, oh, I'm afraid I can't make the basket, so I'm just going to go for the cop-out kind of play. The same way I feel like James Harden does sometimes, where, like, he knows he can't score on the guy, but he can draw the contact to get to go to the line, which is basketball, that's the way it is. But just, it's frustrating, to say the least, I guess.
It was. It definitely was. But you know what? It kind of is what it is, right?
Yeah, I mean.
Fouls like that, I don't know. I think that fouls are an is what it is kind of thing. You've no control.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing is the Pacers have to think about going forward is let the switch happen. Don't be scrambling back almost. Because then if you just let whoever, I mean, let make Turner switch on the drug, and then you find your way to switch it back somehow with, you don't have Aaron Holiday on Bam. I mean, you just got to almost live with some stuff like that sometimes. Because you're better off giving up 2 points than getting a guy in foul trouble.
Yes, I'm with you there.
You have to figure some of that out, right? You got to counter that in some way. But, I think the worries about Aaron Holiday not being ready to play in this game, or like kind of like almost doing too much, definitely were not there. He looked
– he fit in very well when he played.
Yeah. Okay. So I have like 3 more things I want to talk about, but first I want to take a break and we want to get to our wonderful sponsor of today's Locked On Pacers podcast, and that is DoorDash. So are you looking for, I know I am, during these Pacer games, you know, they're at noon, my time, 1 o'clock, you probably want to order food. You don't want to, you know, go out, get stuck in line, and then, you know, somehow miss the beginning of the game. And the best app to use for that is DoorDash. Right now you can order Chinese, pizza, anything you're craving on DoorDash, and you can continue to support your favorite community safely. There are 1,000 restaurants open for delivery on DoorDash that need your patronage more than ever. Support your favorite restaurants on DoorDash. You're counted on restaurants now, they're counting on you now. And while their dining rooms may be closed, they're open for delivery with DoorDash. DoorDash is the app that brings you food you're craving right now, right to your door. Order is easy. Open the DoorDash app, choose whatever you want to eat, and your food will be left safely outside your door with new contactless delivery drop-off settings. With over 300,000 partners in the U.S., Puerto Rico, Canada, and Australia, you can support your local go-to or choose from your favorite national restaurants like Chipotle, Wendy's, the Cheesecake Factory. Ooh, I'd love to have a Chipotle here in Jackson. Many of your favorite local restaurants are still open for delivery. Just open the DoorDash app, select your favorite local restaurant, and your food will be left for you at your door. And right now, our listeners can get $5 off and a zero delivery fees in their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter the code LOCKEDONNBA. That's $5 off your zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store. Enter the code LOCKEDONNBA. Don't forget, that's LOCKEDONNBA for $5 off your first order with DoorDash. So to move away from players real fast, I don't know if you noticed this, a couple of the shots on Nick Millen, but did he look more nervous than normal?
That is not something I noticed. If that
you didn't notice, so they had a couple of shots in where he just kind of looked like I couldn't tell whether it was contemplating or whether it was like trying to trying to figure out what's going on or just like kind of he didn't have like this kind of stoic look to me, and that worried me. But that's just something I noticed.
Interesting
random observations. I don't know. Did you watch the Pacer broadcast or the TNT?
I did. I watched the Fox Sports Indiana broadcast.
Yeah, same. Because I think the Bucks game ran a little long, anyways. Ended up cutting into it.
It did, yeah. The Bucks lost, so maybe if the Pacers win this series, they'll be playing the Magic at them.
Well, I think what that shows game ones don't necessarily mean anything.
Yeah.
But that happened. Didn't the 8 seed Magic beat the Raptors last year too in that game one?
Yes, that is true. That was a lot of funny parallels.
Raptors won the title.
People talked about today. Yeah.
No, so I mean, I think we'll do adjustments in a few minutes, but I think coaching wise, if we're just to kind of say off the top, but I don't think the Pacers were out coaching this game.
I don't either.
Right.
So McMillan kind of got screwed with his ability to even be flexible with the rotation because of the stuff we talked about in the first segment too, right? Like outside like Jakar, he's using as a direct swap with Miles basically in this game. In fact, they were barely over 43 minutes combined or 48 minutes combined, excuse me, right? So the only way he could have done anything, and we'll talk about this, is involving McConnell and McDermott, and I think he played the right lineups most of the time. And it's not like all the stuff we complained about the Heat just dominating, like on the long rebounds and on those lob plays. Like I think there was one lob play that happened still, but very few of the long rebounds. I think the Pacers actually won the rebounding battle, although I don't have that.
Hold on, I'll get it for you. So total rebounds,
they did win the rebounding
35 battle. 35 to 37, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, so they were better there, right? I think their game plan was actually pretty good. I agree with you there. I don't think anything about this game made me go, oh, you know, what is it? Like, they kept attacking. So here's – I have one thing I want to talk about. Okay. They kept attacking Bam Adebayo on in isolations or in switches. I have 9 clips I've been sorting through in front of me on my extra monitor.
Did they win them ever? They won a few of them, didn't they, against him?
On Bam, they scored 8 points on 9 ISO possessions, so not great.
Not great. So we have 9 probably, right? But I mean, 2, 3.
Warren actually had all the buckets. Brogdon struggled on him a ton.
Warren did well, and Warren had a couple of threes pulled up.
Warren buried a three right in his eyes, yep. So I think that – so I asked Nate and Brogdon about this, and Nate said, you know, they just – some of this is what I was talking about earlier where they were missing Depot and Aaron to attack the matchup they want to attack because they kind of get screwed with the ball handler options they have in late clock situations. But he said, you know, they were just attacking the matchup they want to attack when they get stuck in late clock. But also, Brogdon said, you know, I'm prefacing this with, I think attacking Bam is stupid. He's a really good perimeter defender, really talented. We saw that a bunch this game. There's a reason those point per possession numbers I just said are low. That's 9 possessions where, you know, not even getting a point per possession is killer. I asked Brogdon about it, and he said some of it, too, is like trying to get him in foul trouble because their backup bigs are pretty weak, and I never thought of that. That is a good point. But if you are able to keep Bam finished with only 2 fouls, if you are able to keep going at him, get that number up a little higher and limit his minutes from 35 to even 30 or 28, right? What we just talked about, right? Or we didn't really just talk about it, but late third quarter, early fourth, when the Pacers were able to get the lead back, is when Bam was out. So I think that strategy makes sense to try to get him in foul trouble. I just don't know that ISOing him is the way to do it because he shut them down a lot there. I think that is the only gripe I had game plan wise is they were willing to really hammer at Bam when I think they should have been a little bit more focused on Hero and Robinson, but they did go at Robinson a lot, which is something we talked about. They did go at Hero a fair amount.
Yeah, they set a couple. I mean, I saw a couple guard screens, some screens out there. I mean, the problem was
– yeah, Warren did screens and then darted behind the line, right? We got a lot of stuff that we talked about.
Yeah, they would go after those guys, but they would then double team whenever those guys were getting – beat on pretty well. Like you would see Butler come over or Bam come over or whatever, and they did a really good job recovering. He did in that way. I think the one thing I thought was interesting coaching wise, I don't know if it's called coaching or planning, whatever, but like the fact that Sumner was so ready to go, right? I mean, he came off the bench and there was kind of a first sub in.
I mean, I know it's the position, but still, first sub in.
You know, it was kind of the easing of that. So like I thought they just sort of had like they prepared like they were going to miss one of Holiday Oladipo almost. Like they prepared for one of them to be down, and they must have been practicing with 10 guys all week, early, not all week, but whatever, the 5 days since they've been last played a game before today, or was it 5 or 4? It's been that long. It's probably been basically a half a week.
Yes, Ed was ready to go.
But yeah, so I thought that was pretty good. I mean, I think they did a lot of the things we talked about. I just think if we could go back to, but like the game plan kind of fell apart once you didn't have Oladipo. I think they, to me, and this can be an issue, is they missed McDermott on a couple open time where he was wide open to get him the ball, but that was more of a player thing than like a coaching thing. I thought, and they found Justin Holliday just fine, and
he picked on McDermott pretty hard when he was out there. I think that's a reason they couldn't really get him in to switch up the lineups because
no, but like offensively, there were a couple times where I think they were the Pacers sort of just like weren't looking for McDermott almost in a way, and I don't think that's coaching. I think that's more just the way the flow was going, and they just he wasn't. You know, he hadn't like dominated or kind of brought out his presence offensively, so wasn't really looking for him at every opportunity in every corner. But to me, I mean, the other thing, I mean, we can talk about this is I thought they had a decent game plan for Warren to try to get him open. I mean, they're like,
yeah,
you get open for a second, shoot, don't worry about it. And to me, 9 of 18 is a bad night for Warren because I'm used to him going 15 of 18. But
I don't expect him to rip 4 of 5 from deep every night, though.
No. I mean, I think considering how hard he had to work for each point, I thought he had a pretty good night. He played.
Yeah.
I thought pretty decent defensively. He had 4 steals. And that's a lot. I didn't really even have that many on the box score.
No, Warren played well. They needed him too, as well.
Yeah, and to me, if they get Oladipo back, it's kind of the perfect combination because I think last time we did a playoff preview or when it mattered at least, we were like saying, oh, the issue was Oladipo kept getting double teamed. They had no option, right? Well, now they're not going to double-team Oladipo, right? And if Oladipo can put up enough points and be an offensive threat, then there's no way to double-team Warren, and then it's just like you got to pick your poison if you're the Heat. And that's like the perfect position because then it's like Brogdon just wide open half the time if they're trying to like double-team both or scrambling on both almost. So, I mean, Warren is getting so much respect that it's almost kind of a good thing because it should help the Pacers in like a long-run kind of thing if he's getting this kind of respect and still scoring 22 in nights like this. But I thought they kind of gave him the green light. Like if you see a window, just take it. And that was a good idea.
So let's talk about Miles.
You don't want to do Warren a little bit even?
No, we haven't talked about Miles Turner at all.
We haven't done Warren at all either to this now.
I think we got enough of Warren by saying that he shot well and they found ways to get him the ball.
All right, fine. Move on to Turner.
Because I think Miles not playing well is very important. Yeah. They need him to be better going forward. 9 points, 9 rebounds. Including, I think, one of the worst passes I've seen in an NBA game ever at one point.
Yeah.
He just doesn't want to shoot. And I think he airballed his first three, which I think, given the way Miles plays, he took 3 threes, which is more than he took in a couple bubble games. I think he needs to be more willing to shoot because he really didn't stretch them out very much. They were really willing to help off of him, and he didn't really make them pay for it. And he had a few easy misses around the basket with Nurkic-itis where he just lays it up instead of just dunking
the damn ball. Yeah, he needs to dunk the ball. The dude's 7 feet tall and jump probably from the like halfway between the free line and the hoop. Just dunk it. Just
Nurkic dunk is balling in the bubble, though, so that used to be a negative because Yusuf Nurkic is the king of not dunking when he's right around the rim. But just dunk the damn ball.
You're like the biggest guy on the court. Just dunk it. Yeah. Stop. You get called for on the foul, whatever. Just dunk the ball.
He drew a couple fouls. Like, just do it. He got anyway.
To me, I thought defensively he was actually okay. I mean,
I'm great defensive second half. I definitely thought he played really good.
Yeah, I thought he did well in the switches. Like, he got put on Butler and wasn't called for 3 fouls, which is kind of a win to me.
Yeah. I definitely think Miles played good D. There's a reason he was able to be out there for so long. But his offense, was really not that very good.
Well, I thought he pushed Bam a little bit on defensively, too. I thought Bam wouldn't have any easy buckets. What is Bam's? I forget what his season. So Bam's like normally a 55% shooter, and he kept him at 50. So I mean, and he obviously didn't play every minute with him. Did. Actually. He might have almost played every minute with him, pretty much. But I thought he did defensively. I thought he was.
Bam had a few just burned him in the first quarters. Those went away after the first quarter too.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if it's best to say he defensively performed at average or even slightly above average, but offensively he just like
very weak game.
Yeah, I mean he. There's one time where he just should have taken the three and then just try to make a play and lost the ball. I mean, I don't know. Is he lost offensively? I can't really understand.
I think they're trying to like square peg round hole him into like a lot of stuff Sabonis did.
It doesn't work.
Because like in Pat, we've seen him play as the lone center for like his whole career before the season, right? And he had games like this. Like, I don't want to say he never had games like this, but he very rarely had as many in a row that he's had in the bubble. And I feel like they're kind of trying to use him in a way that he's not accustomed to, even as a center, because center's his natural position, right? Like, you'd expect him to be able to fit in well. And I think they're trying to have him do a lot more ball reversals and screens than he's accustomed to.
The difference is that Sabonis shoots like 69% around the rim.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I think it would help a lot if instead of having Miles move the ball, if he – you know, was encouraged, or even if he himself took it upon himself to just rip a few more threes in there.
And also Sabonis shooting 50% from the 16 to not 3-point range. I mean, that's the difference.
Right.
Doesn't have that, like, if you shag off him, you can just be money from, like, the free throw line, basically. I mean, I think the thing with Turner is I don't know what happened, and I think it's because it's probably the guards, but the past 2 years, Darren Collison, it was really pick and pop, right? That was like
– Collison got him the ball way better than anyone else ever. Yeah,
but like it seemed like the pick and pop was so easy. All Collison did, which can't be that hard for most guys to do, is he basically set the pop and threw the ball behind his back, right, behind the back pass to Turner.
He would take one hard dribble and just toss it behind him, yep.
And, like, it can't seem like it's that hard for Brogdon to do that. Like, Brogdon's very skilled ball handler. He had a couple great passes. I mean, I saw Brogdon hit Turner and Chikar on, like, perfect cutting plays.
Yeah, 10 assists.
On a way where, like – I brought in a couple passes during this game where he threw the ball and I'm like, oh, that's where the ball went? Like, I couldn't believe it went to the spot. Like, he saw that spot before anybody else did. But, yeah, I mean, it seemed just offensively like he is totally – I don't know if aggressive is the right word, but just been so, like, relegated this year that he hasn't had the opportunity to shine and, like, it's made him rusty or whatever. But it's just been sort of painful to watch because if he can't – you know – if he can't go 7 of 11 like that on a night, they really don't have a shot because then he becomes just the guy. Like, you can put him in all the picks, but nobody's going to guard him, and then he's no threat on the corner, so then the court just shrinks and it becomes a huge issue.
Even if he's 6 of 11 and he's 2 of 5 from deep, I think that's much better than this game.
Yeah, he has to be told that if you're open, just shoot the three.
Rip it. Dude, even if he misses, look, I get why he's thinking reversal. Like, in the first quarter, the offense was really clicking, but he's got to shoot him.
No, because even if he gets 2 of 4 of them or 2 of 5 or 2 of 6, I mean, it's just like make them have to somewhat guard you. Don't just kind of make it
a quarter of a second of thought of, do I have to guard that guy, is so helpful. A quarter of a second.
Yeah. Well, there's a reason teams tell. I mean, every center, I mean, it used to be the old Marcus Saul thing was just shoot the ball. Who cares if you don't make it right off? Just shoot it. Eventually you'll get good enough at it, but just shoot it, because if you don't shoot it, teams won't even respect you out there when you have the ball. I mean, that's the difference. Yep. I think the last part we haven't talked about is Brogdon, really.
Yeah, if he didn't have some rough ISOs, he had quite a few rough ISOs. I think he played a pretty good game. Couldn't get the three to go, but 22 and 10 with
shot to go. Not really a good shooting night for him.
Yeah, the three especially, because he was 5 for 12 on twos, which is not great, but not embarrassing, you know. But 1 for 6 from deep was rough. Yeah, Bam was really a tough guy for him to get by. We talked about that on our series preview. But again, 22 and 10, pretty solid game. Did a good job getting to the line, 10 free throw attempts. So I think that's a lot of shooting possessions for him, which he just ended up being, like, as a result of no Holiday, no Depot, and all of Warren's attention, meant he got a lot of dribble opportunities. I think he responded pretty well, and his distributing was good. But, yeah, he needs to be hitting some shots or getting steps, because if not, he needs to pass a little more, right? I think if it was 14 assists and he was 6 of 14, that would have been much better.
Obviously. Yeah, I'm not sure who got the ball, too. Who was there to really take the shots?
No one. Yeah, Sumner can't shoot either. That's another – like, he was useful out there because of his defense. But, yeah, he was tough on
up. Yeah, I mean, he has to be out there with some better offensive players. I mean, there's what, third of – if Barton is not shooting, his second and third option to pass the ball weren't out there. I mean, that's what's the difference in Holiday and Oladipo. I mean, that's – I know it seems kind of like a cop-out when we keep doing it, but I just can't say enough how much Oladipo not being there just kind of pulled it up from all their gameplay. I think that was kind of – right, so going into this whole bubble thing, we thought no Oladipo will have Sabonis, and that was – Sabonis was going to be the key player, right? Well, then losing both of them in a game is like almost just too much to overcome, because that's – might be their two best players, but it's their third and fourth best player at a minimum, or second and fourth best player, whatever it is. And it just, like, at some point that just becomes an issue because you just don't have enough depth. I mean, that's like when you have, you know, 40 million of your cap not playing, that's an issue in general.
Right. Definitely. And I really am wondering if we'll have Depot for game 2. Pacers statement did not make that clear, saying he's day to day out of the hospital. I've gotten this question a lot, Adam, and I don't actually know this answer, but I'm pretty confident. I believe the hospital is a part of the bubble, right? There's no quarantine.
I actually had the exact same question for you. I assumed
because it. My reasoning for that is two things. One, the Pacers didn't say anything in the statement, which I think they probably would have if he did have quarantine. But two, we just had the Derrick Jones Jr. injury, and he had to get an MRI, and he played in this game, right?
So yeah, he
went somewhere where he could get an MRI and still played. So I imagine that means the hospital is a part of the bubble.
That, or they have some kind of isolated wing of the hospital they can use, or something.
Yeah, something like that. A makeshift Disney hospital thing.
For Although we game. Say this now, then he'll have COVID. Knock on wood, he doesn't.
Knock on wood, no kidding. So, yeah, if he's able to overcome – I mean, his eye was really swollen. I can't believe he made the
free throw. Yeah, I mean, he couldn't see out of it. I think
see him mouthing. I can't see, like, in the game. So
hopefully he'll be okay. I think once the swelling – the problem is it's just a quick turnaround. So, but you would think the swelling will come down, and then it's just a matter of, you know.
Can he see?
I think, I mean, like they went to the hospital. If his eye, they probably said your eye's going to be fine. It just needs to unswell. I wonder if he couldn't see now because his eye couldn't see because if his eye, like, it'll look, he got hit in the side where it swelled up in the side and that almost blocked, like, the swelling blocked his vision. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm wondering if it's not, like, actually his eyeball couldn't see, but just, like, because his, because that happens. I mean, I've never had it, but one time my cousin got hit in the face, and if you hit around your eyes, it swells up really quickly because it's right where your brain is. It's like a almost your body's
protection thing.
Yeah, so it swells up really big and really bad. Now, it doesn't go away very quickly, but maybe with some of the NBA stuff, it goes away quicker because they have better medicine and, you know, better regimens for how to get rid of that kind of stuff. But, I mean, I wonder if he'll play one-eyed in a way because, like, they need him, and he's a tough – it's not like it's like a – injury is likely to happen again. You know what I mean?
Adam, would you say that you are hopeful that his eye can adjust?
I knew you were going to do that. I got, well, let's take a break. I actually have a question for you on the adjustment coming back, but also about Vic. Let's take another break, and then we'll do all of that. So today's Locked On Pacers is also brought to you by our presenting sponsor, and that's Built Bar is back. So as you know, well, actually, it's different now. Built Bar has 18 amazing flavors. That means 6 new flavors from the last time they were one of our top sponsors, and they added those new flavors are caramel brownie or caramel brownie, however you want to pronounce it. I'm from Indiana, so we call it caramel. Cookies and cream, cherry Barcia, I think it's a play on cherry Garcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, apple and apple almond crisp. As we all know, Built Bar is a great way for the healthy conscious guy. You can lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. Bars are low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, and great for the keto diet. My favorite one, I continue to say, is the peanut butter one, which is 19 grams of protein, 180 calories, 5 grams of sugar, and 5 net carbs. One of the new ones, the interesting name, cherry Barcia, 17 grams of protein, 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, and 4 gram net carbs. And right now, Built Bar has a reset the promo for this relaunch. With a Built Bar purchase, you'll get a free cooler while supplies last. This only lasts for a few weeks, so we advise you to get on that right now. Go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON, and also you'll get $10 off your next order. That's right, use the promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off and possibly a free cooler at BuiltBar.com. Okay, this is an adjustment, but do you think if Vic plays, he wears a face mask? Like a...
Maybe.
Is it called a face mask? What's it called?
When they go over your eye all the way up like that, I don't know.
They can. I think they can. Or does he wear glasses or some kind of goggles?
He could wear the mask he wore in the dunk contest.
Or does he wear goggles?
Goggles? Oh, man. That would be awesome. If he played well, we could start the lore of goggles, Vic. That would be so
fun. I think the mask protects your eye. I think it does. It kind of goes all the way around your eyes and your nose. It protects all your facial bones. So.
Yeah.
So I don't know, but that's just a thought.
That's the first adjustment. What is his headgear?
No, so real adjustments. I have adjustment first, but you want to go first?
No,
so
you can go first.
I think the
I already kind of said mine earlier, so if you take it, then I'll be pissed.
Oh. Well, mine's around Warren.
Okay, good.
I think the first adjustment you got to make is you maybe got to put the ball in his hands off, bring up the ball.
I was assuming you were going to say that, and I had kind of buried this as like a throwaway adjustment if I needed it, but I'll use it.
Okay. So
I was going to say have him – take the ball at the floor.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. So let me make my case quick, and then you can counter, because I know you
probably – No, I don't have a counter.
Okay. Well, let me make my case first, and then you can agree with it.
I have no counter.
No, I mean, I think they didn't – like, they struggled at times to get him the ball where they got him a lot of triple teams and whatnot. But, like, it wasn't, like, as terrible as it was last time. They definitely found a way to kind of get him open. So, like, there is ways for it to work. But I'm wondering if you just put the ball in his hands and then clear out space, right? Spread the floor and just Darren Mandel to the top of the key. I mean, that's what they used to do with Oladipo, really, right? Is
they let him do his thing from up there.
Yeah, if Mandel to the top of the key, then you have a 4-on-3. And, you know, I know Turner's necessarily the best, but maybe set a pick with somebody else, right? If they're trying to set a pick, you know, if they put Bam in it, maybe you try to switch that or whatever. But, like, get a 4-on-3 and then have that guy make a play. I mean, that's the move, because it seems like the way he is pulling up from three, he is just a threat, right? I mean, and to me, he's gonna have to beat Butler one-on-one, and he got beat pretty bad once in that fourth quarter by Butler just swiping out of his hands. And I think that was just, you know, Butler got him there. But he's going to have to beat Butler one-on-one. And I think he can on some cases, right? I just think
– Yeah, I think he can beat anyone in the league.
I mean, he's gotten that good. I mean, that's what I mean. I think he can beat – I mean, Kawhi might be able to get him. I don't know. Kawhi's kind of the best defender in the league right now.
Ever.
For Giannis. But to me, I think – I mean, he has that ability, or he's such a threat from the pull-up three from that, like, 27-foot spot where, like, it's so hard to guard him. Or if you play too close and he'll beat you going to the rim, and then he's gotten decent at being able to kick it out. So if it gets double teamed, he'll just throw it out to the corner. I mean, it seems like you got to make that seems like an easy adjustment to make, especially when they can't find a bucket. Just, you know, put your shooters in the corner and let him figure it out, basically.
I would be totally okay with that. He can't really pass to said corner shooters, but if they add space for him, that's enough to make it successful. And yeah, I agree. I mean, I think he was their leading scorer for a reason. I mean, tied with Brogdon. He was their leading scorer for a reason, right? He clearly can score. It took him less opportunities than Brogdon.
Actually, Tony, in the regular season, he was the leading scorer for the Pacers. Oh, you mean just in the last game.
This game.
Okay, sorry. Yes.
This one game. Zero free throw attempts is crazy. Crazy. Him getting to the line, getting in there would be very helpful for his scoring as well. Can I do my adjustment now, my first one?
Yeah, go ahead.
I kind of hinted at it earlier. More TJ McConnell. I want TJ McConnell to play more than 13 minutes. I'm not exactly sure who I want that at the expense of between Sumner and Justin Holiday. It's one of those two guys. Or even some of if Aaron's minutes are going to ratchet up. I don't know. It's hard to find minutes.
So
Brogdon played nearly 40.
Here's a thought. So if the Heat are going to play Olynyk as their center, right? He's their center pretty much, right?
Yeah, how killer were his two threes, man?
That
sucked the air out of the Pacers' net.
Yeah, it did suck. But if they're going
to – Anyway.
But can't they go, like, ridiculously small then? I mean, like –
They kind of did with Jakar.
No, but do they even need to play – could they go even smaller, right? Could they just play like Warren? Like, five minutes where the lineup is like McDermott, Holiday, McConnell – Warren and Sumner. Like, could that – I mean, that would be – right? I mean, I know you're laughing at that. Tom. But, like, right?
I think it could work, I guess.
Right? I mean, I don't know. That's probably like a – you try it for a couple minutes, it might get crushed, and then you move on from it. But, like, I'm just thinking that, like, that's – it seems like – and then you can play McConnell. I don't know. That puts McConnell more minutes. But it seems like that's a move with McConnell. It's just because, like, I think the other option is, do you just play him over, like, Aaron Holiday in some lineups and play, you know – him in that spot as the point guard and play Brogdon as the two or three almost.
I think Justin Holiday is the guy I would crank minutes down to get McConnell more for in this game. But Justin Holiday was really good, so that's hard to do.
And he's a better defender than McConnell.
He definitely is, and he can guard more guys. It's hard. Maybe it's Sumner. I don't know. But McConnell can get into the damn paint, and they had a lot of trouble with that today against anyone. And the Heat switch everything anyway. So having a guy who can, you know, make whatever guy happens to be on him move into the paint, set up shooters like Justin Holiday, or set up, you know, his other ball handlers in advantageous positions. I think they need more of that. I don't think they had enough. You know, when he was in there, I think things were going pretty well in this game. I know he only had 5 points, but I thought he did really well with that second unit, kept things moving, kept him in the lead, got him into the lead in the early fourth. I think he played a good game, and I think they need him in there a little bit more. I think I would get him try to like 17 or 18 minutes.
Yeah. I wonder if he should have been the first put in over Aaron Holiday's. And I'm not gonna foul trouble.
Maybe. Not I like that point, I guess. Choice, well, but yes, was, I think that could have been a good idea.
Right, like if Vic is still in that lineup, I do think there's enough defense to be able to play McConnell. Now, I think when you have Vic and Holiday, then you get some issues. But I think if you have Vic and McConnell and Brogdon and Warren, there's enough defense there to work. Because the thing about McConnell too is he'll get picked on. But if he's stuck one-on-one on somebody, he's not going to get, like, super killed because he's just too high energy and too nuisancey in a way, right? Like he can chase after someone like Duncan Robinson enough, or he can be on Drogic and might maybe not get killed I guess Drogic tonight, no matter who was on him, he was going to score because he was killing it all night. But I just feel like he can hold his own for a little bit, and he provides, like you said, that kind of cutting ability to just knife through the defense and then find somebody else that's open that they just didn't really have with anybody else because nobody else – I don't know why, but – besides, like, Aaron Holiday, he feels like the fastest guy is McConnell. Maybe Vic, too. But, like, those three are their top three fastest guys pretty much.
Yep. Get some speed in. Make them move. Make them more tired. I think McConnell would be helpful. I don't know that, you know, they were actually outscored with him on the floor in this game, right? He's not the answer. But I think more of him would be helpful. I think he can fit in more lineups than McMillan has put him in with because Brogdon can play two, especially if they're going to have low amounts of depot. So I would play more McConnell. Do you have another one?
So I don't have another adjustment. I don't think you make it yet, but at some point, Justin Holiday will start one of these games, correct?
If he keeps shooting like that, absolutely.
He was there. Well, I guess Vic was a plus on the court, but basically Holiday and Jakar were the only two. And I mean, I think almost it felt like he was going to do it at the start of the game. Like, remember McMillan? I mean, you were there.
They got outscored by 14 minutes with Justin Holiday out, or 14 points in 17 minutes with Justin Holiday out.
So
16 minutes.
Right. McMillan didn't give a starting lineup, so there was like kind of a thought, oh, is he going to start somebody different this time? And we thought that was
Justin Holiday. Think that was just
– that was just a tease. It was just a big tease.
Yeah, gamemanship.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's fine. But, like, I think at some point, if Holiday – I mean, this is one game, but this – he – we thought eventually if he played this well, he should be a starter on this team just because he probably actually fits better as kind of the 2-3 guard than Aaron Holiday does. Now it hurts your bench because you got to figure out how to like get the minutes there and whatnot. But and who do, you know, then you need to play Holiday with McConnell and not like the perfect fit all the time. So that's a little bit of an issue. But I think at some point you got to figure out. I mean, I guess Holiday, they didn't really have just a close because they were pretty much down 10. With 4 minutes left, but I wonder if this game got really close if he would have closed the game.
Just killer. Like, minutes 4-2 left on the clock from Jimmy Butler to make it impossible for there to be.
Yeah, so, I mean, in this game. Do you have another adjustment before I throw another thought?
Well, this is less an adjustment. Yeah, it's kind of an adjustment. I talked about Bam ISOs earlier and how I just hated them, right? It doesn't work. And I get that Jimmy's probably a better defender, but I think what you should do in those instances, even if it's like Edmund Sumner or Justin Holiday dribbling, is just raise your wings up from the corners, toss the ball to them, and let them do it instead, because going at Bam just isn't going to work. It's just not going to work. Go at someone else.
Yeah, I mean, I think...
I think even having a lesser ball handler attacker is better than going at Bam.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's...
Personally.
To me, with Bam, you want to just pull him away from the play as much as possible.
I understand trying to get him in foul trouble. That makes a lot of sense to me. But don't even throw a screen. Like, if there's eight on the shot clock and it's you're the whoever with the ball and you're staring at Bam Adebayo, call your wing up, toss it to him, go. Let it in.
Yeah, I mean, I think you got to figure out a counter to them double teaming on every time you kind of attack. Either Duncan Robinson or I guess when Metal Hero was in there, kind of did the same thing. You got to figure out how you're going to, like, identify that fast enough and move the ball around, right? Because there were some opportunities there where, like, I think from home, you're like, oh, here comes the double, basically, right? And so I don't know if the adjust – I mean, your adjustment might work. Maybe the adjustment is just get the pass out as quick as possible as soon as you see it happening and just keep the Heat scrambling, keep the ball moving till they keep running around, keep your guys kind of stationary. But it seems like you need something to kind of counter that because you had the right game plan to go after the bad defenders, but if they're going to
– right.
But if they're going to double team and then kind of help off constantly, you got to figure out how to beat that in a way.
Yeah. I'm with you.
And it's simply as telling your guys, okay, so if they're going to help Bam off, we're going to put Turner in that right corner. They're going to help off Bam, know that there's like open guy in the corner and just kick the ball to defend the guy in the corner, basically.
Right. I dig that. I don't have any other ones. But I do have a question for you.
Yeah, go ahead, ask. This is my
walk off the show question. Did this game make you more or less confident? I mean, obviously they lost, right? So like – that is a lack of confidence. But does this make you more or less confident for the rest of the series, or neither? Neither.
The Vic injury really can. It's the deciding factor because I honestly thought if Vic played the game, they were going to have a shot. Now I think it's just it came to clutch play. Who's going to be clutcher? And Vic might not have been clutch depending on. But I felt like he has the for like a better term balls to basically take a shot 2 minutes left from 28 feet and make it because he just has that in him and he does it. He's even. Post-injury, he did that a couple times.
He didn't get to take a pull-up three in this game.
Yeah. So, I mean, if Vic's eye is not like – he can see out of both eyes. And maybe there's some way he can kind of almost like the motivating factor. But
that's not supposed to be funny, but
– No, but if he can see out of both eyes, I mean, I like the Pacers shot. I mean, I don't think winning four of the next six is that hard. I don't think this is like some – you know, there's no – You know, if we were saying this is a home court advantage thing and they lost home court, I'd say, oh, it's kind of hard. It's going to be tough now to gain that home court back. But, like, you know, the game is so close and they're all in the same spot. Like, there's days where, like, if Justin Holiday can probably stay hot for six games in a row, they could probably win a lot of them. If, you know, more shoots the same way, win a lot of them. And I don't know what the Heat adjustments are, right? I mean, I think you know, the Heat will try to just keep doing what they did till it, if it works again, right? And then they'll have to adjust once it doesn't work. But because they'll eventually lose, I don't think they're going to sweep the Pacers. But, you know, I feel like there's more room for the Pacers to grow than for the Heat to grow, I guess. Heat played a really – I thought played, a, you know, besides, you know, shooting not that great from three, but also 37 isn't terrible. I don't know if there's, like, some spot where I'm like the Heat
– Duncan Robinson is their big ticket to improvement.
Right, but, like, I feel like that will be
– But if he takes both of Butler's makes, you may
exactly.
Be right
back. Like, I mean, I think – If you they combined took 10 threes, if Butler and him made 4 of 10, that would have been like the average.
Yeah.
Fine, right?
I think it's a neutral confidence game for me. I think they actually played better than the score indicates. Actually, I think everyone who watched the game would agree with that because, I mean, they were only down by 12 at the end, right? They were in it until the last 3 minutes or whatever. But I think they can – I don't know if they'll – I picked Heat in 6 anyway, so I'm still on that line. But I think they can, you know, compete in these games and win a game or two or even three if things break their way.
Yeah, and if they could, like I said, if they get Vic back, they're going to stagger, they can destroy the Heat bench unit, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, the Heat's bench just didn't look that good. I mean, there, you know, Iguodala just looks like – I came in the game, I thought, well, that guy looks like he's 35 years old or however old he is. He's pretty old at this point. His hair was kind of starting to recede and not there in patches. But and maybe he gets better and just hasn't played enough minutes or whatever, but, like – there was nobody on the bench I was scared of. And when Bam Butler is sitting, I'm thinking, that's such a beatable team. Like, if you can win those by, like, 10 or 15 points, I mean, that could really shape this game. Now, the problem will be the Heat will then maybe play Butler 42 minutes in a game because he can do that. They need to adjust that. But it's just – they got to figure out how to beat them. They beat them in the minutes already, but beat them by even more. And that's something that's going to be staggering to get either Warren out there at times. And there was a moment where I think Warren almost didn't want to be pulled when he got kind of hot in that first quarter. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens, though.
I'm excited to see game two and adjustments and what that means for both teams. Should be fun.
Yep. So we will not have a podcast tomorrow because the game is at noon. So this podcast should carry over pretty well to kind of halfway through that day. We will be back, though, on Thursday evening, Friday morning with a podcast breaking down game two and looking ahead, obviously, again to game three and adjustments. And then we'll bring you a podcast on that Saturday after the game, I believe, again, kind of breaking down what happened. Hopefully by Saturday they at least have one win, because that's if they don't, then we heading towards another quick playoff for the Pacers. But I think they'll hopefully get one of the next two as long as Oladipo returns, but we'll see what happens with that. As always, you can follow the Locked On Pacers podcast at Locked On Pacers, me at FreeMadden5, Tony East at T East NBA. That is all for Locked On Pacers podcast, and we'll see you guys later in the week.